You cannot say undocumented people are not here. We are here.
Exactly.
Whether you acknowledge our existence or not, we are here.
Yeah.
And the moment we acknowledge that we are here, we claim our space. After reclaiming the space, we need to have platforms. After having platforms, we do not just sit at the table and nod our heads or stone. The voices are carried forward.
Yeah.
And then when the voices are carried forward, we need to be listened to. Then after we have been listened to, we need to see implementation. Implementation to me means that some of the things or the demands that we want are being put into prospect.
Welcome everyone to an English episode of The Verbranders, a podcast on Europe's borders and resistance against them. I'm Neske Baarwald.
And I am Wiebe Ruitenberg.
The Verbranders is Dutch for Haraga, an Arabic word used in Tunisia, Algeria, and Morocco. Haraga literally means those who burn, and is used to speak of people who cross European borders without permission. It refers to the burning of identity papers. Those who do Haraga seek life, and in doing so, burn Europe's borders. Our guest today is Hidaya Nampima, co-founder and spokesperson of Amsterdam City Rights, an organization of people living in Amsterdam with and without the right papers. What is Amsterdam like if you don't have a BSN number? When you are shut out from healthcare, schooling, housing, education, legal work, and political participation? Hidaya talks about becoming undocumented and being pushed onto the streets to then pick up her pieces and find her voice by challenging injustice. There's no such thing as being undocumented, she explains. It's the system that creates undocumented people. The mineral wealth of Africa continues to be extracted. The copper, the gold, the diamonds. Removed and sold expensively, while most people are hindered from coming to Europe, creating distinctions between people. Hidaya explains how this injustice moved her to co-found Amsterdam City Rights. With Amsterdam City Rights, she claims a seat at the table of the city where she lives, to speak out for a truly inclusive city, where every living soul can flourish. In her words, nothing about us, without us. Hidaya also brings two pieces of audio to the conversation that are meaningful to her. Both pieces are by Bobby Wine. First, we listen to a political speech he gave on the situation in Uganda and what moved him into politics. And at the end of the conversation, we listen to his song Freedom. If you want to learn more about the work of Amsterdam City Rights, listen to their podcast series, produced by and for undocumented people. And also make sure to download the City Rights app, which helps undocumented people to navigate the city and can function as a tool of power. In this episode, we tend to use the word undocumented people for those people who are illegalized by the immigration system. We're curious to hear your thoughts on the podcast. Please do get in touch with us and share this episode widely. Enjoy. So, welcome, Hidaya. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today. As a first question, we wanted to talk about your organizing work and what got you to doing all this organizing work. As you know, borders make it such that people who are illegalized often live in the shadows and are pushed into invisibility and also into isolation from one another. So it takes a lot to then visibilize yourself.
Right.
And as we kind of discussed when we met before, I think you jokingly said something like, I'm Amsterdam's most famous undocumented person.
Correct.
What brought you to take up this active role and this visible role as someone who is illegalized?
Oh, thank you so much for inviting me. It's always a pleasure to see myself being one of the most outspoken persons we have in the city. I call myself the most undocumented famous person in Amsterdam, because at least very many people can always identify me by that, because they have seen me at different stages, different podiums, trying to give out the most challenging situations that we go through. In the beginning, I was an introvert. I was very shy. I didn't know how to navigate the city. I didn't know what I should do. But because I became an undocumented person after my asylum was not granted, so I was pushed on the streets. And when you are pushed on the streets, you don't really have a sense of direction. I didn't want to get myself into trouble, so I decided to find the most useful and beneficial way that I could benefit myself and also other people like me. I picked up my pieces from there. I wanted to be visible. I wanted to have a platform. I wanted the community to know that undocumented people or refugees or people who have been not granted their papers are not bad people. This is what I wanted to bring out. And there was no way I would do that under my bed or in the closet. So I had to jump on almost every platform that I could get. And that's how I started. And here we are.
Well, welcome.
Thank you.
Yes, welcome indeed. And we wanted to talk to you about what it is like to be undocumented in Amsterdam. And we've talked about this on this podcast before, and you speak about this so often, it's everywhere. But at the same time, it's still so necessary to talk about it, right? Because there's still so many people who don't really understand the situation, or who maybe want to forget the situation. So it's so important to keep on remembering everyone what it is like to live in a city like Amsterdam without without a BSN number or without the right kind of paper. So maybe you can talk a bit about that.
I would begin with who an undocumented person is. An undocumented person is someone who does not have the legal rights to owning a bank account, to requesting for a job, to do voluntary work, and then also to be able to participate in the political opinions of the country, or even Amsterdam as a city. Undocumented people are of various categories, depending on what situation you as an individual are. We have people who are stateless. When I talk about stateless, I mean people who have stayed here for a longer period of time, and somehow their countries were eroded onto the world map, so they cannot really approve their origin. So it puts them in at a very vulnerable situation that they cannot have documents that prove that they come from those particular places. Then we also have people who come here as migrant workers. They are sometimes being deceived or coerced into coming here in Europe or Netherlands at large, that they will make a lot of money. So these people find themselves in limbo, that they could go and do jobs like cleaning, babysitting and all this kind of stuff. But this domestic work is not really recognized as legal work. Then we also have people like myself. I became an undocumented person after I asked for asylum and it was not granted. And since it wasn't granted, I was given a letter of 28 days to leave the country, but I couldn't leave. So I had to find my way into the city. So like I said, being undocumented really depends on everybody's situation, because we all have different situations.
Yeah, one phrase I really appreciate is that people live, move and work, but the law kind of changes around people. So different kind of laws are made to apply to different people, and kind of this vulnerability is produced, right? It's not something natural.
Yeah. There's no person who is undocumented. It's the systems. It's the creating of distinctions. Like you say, if I come to Netherlands and ask for asylum, the moment I get my papers, the term undocumented will disappear, yes. Right? But the moment that I don't get my papers, this term will stay with me, even if I stay here for 10 years or even more. So it's the system that creates undocumented people. And the system is not providing justice. So for me, I think the fact that they create systems is a way of hindering or stopping people from coming to countries like the Netherlands.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And different rules are made to apply to different people.
Right. I would say, for instance, I don't want to talk about the Ukrainians because sometimes people think we are attacking them. I would compare two scenarios. I would compare the time when we had the Afghanistan problem mm-hmm. and then when we had the Ukraine problem. Mm. When the Afghanistans had a problem, most of the Western world countries chickened out. They said there's no space, they don't have resources, they cannot really take people in. Just after a couple of months, we saw catastrophe in Ukraine. Mm-hmm. Finally, the borders were open. Everybody opened their houses for the Ukrainians. Food supplies were provided. So many things were put into place. What happened when other people got into problems? It's like we have distinctions in humanity. Some people are more human than others. Mm-hmm. So to me, I think if danger prevails or catastrophe has stricken, there should always be a place to welcome everybody, regardless whether you don't have blue eyes or you don't have blonde hair. Yeah, you should always feel welcome. And then also the fact that the Dutch people opened their homes, because we know as Amsterdam as a whole has approximately between 30,000 to 60,000 undocumented people. And for a longer period of time, we have not seen so many people take us in.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I mean us, like, because I also belong to this community, right?
Yes.
So we have not seen that happen. So why would you wait for people who look like you to have problems to get them in? Yet in the cities, we have already thousands of people who are looking for help.
Yeah, and I think the us that you're referring to now is also non-white people, right? In this case, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think that the Ukrainian case, I agree with you. It's not necessarily to suggest that Ukrainians shouldn't be welcome here. Because, of course, they are welcome, right? Everyone is welcome, and that should be the message. But at the same time, this comparison brings out, well, a couple of things. First of all, that it is a choice. Right, that we can make the choice to welcome people and to open up borders. Mm-hmm. And then second of all, also when we make that choice, it makes that very clear, right? In what kind of circumstances we do.
Yeah, and it shows how legal systems such as visa regimes tie into government responses and tie into local government responses and people's homes.
Yeah.
And how kind of also this racism that you're talking about is ingrained on different levels.
Mm.
So it's already, even before the Ukrainian crisis or the invasion of Ukraine, I should say, before that occurred, Ukrainians had a different situation when it comes to visas than Ugandans, for example, you're from. And that is the structural inequality that underlies also all of these responses.
Yeah.
And the racist inequality that is already ingrained on such a kind of basic level. And then all of the responses and choices, as you rightly point out, are then also made in that context, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that it's just really important to see how that racism is so structurally embedded and then also, of course, personally lived out and embedded.
Yeah, like when we talk about migration is not something that started just last year or 10 years ago. Yeah. The borders were created to deprive certain countries or certain continents from people from coming in.
Mm-hmm.
I presume most of us Africans didn't know about the Western world not until slavery, right? People were displaced from their origins to different places because sometimes maybe they believed these people are more energetic or they can be of a great value to them, right? And then also, like, when we talk about the wealth, the mineral wealth, the copper, the gold, the diamonds, the platinum that is in Africa, that has been removed from Africa to the Western world and sold expensively, right? So for me, I believe we wouldn't be where we are right now if the Western world hadn't interfered with Africa. And when they created borders, they were targeting certain groups of people, including Africa as a whole, Asia to be precise. Yeah. So when they created the borders, they created visas, because I know people who went to the US many years ago without visas. But because they saw that now many people's eyes have been opened and they know what happens elsewhere, so they are coming. Then they created the visa rules. You have to have travel insurance. You have to have so much money on on your account. You have to have to, you have to prove so many things for you to be allowed. So I think this is one way of discriminating, because I know back home in Uganda, we always see volunteers, we always see tourists. So we should not look at migration as something that just started or that something that is going to end tomorrow. No, it's going to happen. Why? Because wars are continuing to be fueled. Catastrophe has continued to prevail in other locations. So once you displace people in their homeland, they're automatically free. They'll automatically look for a place where they feel a sense of belonging. But still, there has not been a situation where the Western world takes the blame, but they forget about the dangers that they have caused humanity. You cannot bomb Syria, you cannot bomb Libya, you cannot bomb all these countries where there are even little children, and you expect people to stay there. They'll automatically flee.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think this is such an important point, and something that needs to be made over and over again. And I said earlier, like, people don't know the situation of undocumented people in Amsterdam or the Netherlands, but people also don't know this. Well, maybe they do know, but maybe they want to. They don't want to know as well, right? This whole idea of, well, people come here because we were there. So thank you for bringing that out and making that point, because it is so crucial. Also, the extraction of wealth from these places and just making all these places really unlivable.
Which is ongoing.
Yeah, which is ongoing.
Yeah, it baffles me that I have one time got into trouble because of a mistaken identity. Someone passed a certain shop who somehow they say was exactly dressed like myself the previous day, and this person stole some stuff. So when I came, they called police on me.
Here in Amsterdam.
Just at the central station. And then they say, I stole something from them. I told them, even the previous day, luckily I was in The Hague. I wasn't in Amsterdam. That is because I had my card to prove that around the time the robbery or the theft occurred, I was not there. That's what really helped me. But I got personally, I felt so attacked. If it was a different person, if it was not a person of color, would this thing have happened? And they did not want to apologize to me. They did not want to acknowledge the mistake that they had created. So we, most of the time, finding ourselves into trouble, not because we are troublemakers, but because the people around us are very afraid that probably something is going to go wrong. I'll give you a scenario when the new program of undocumented people was coming in, because before we had the BBB. Right. And then now we have the LVV, which is a very long dash word that I don't even understand what it means. But I know it was an improved version of the BBB. In the BBB, we never had independence. We were crowded like chickens, like what you only owned was a bed. So with the LVV, you could have at least bigger space, just two people sharing a reasonable room. But before that, we used to have talks with the neighbors in different areas. We attended some of them. Personally, I stopped because the response from the Amsterdamers was not really good.
Mm-hmm.
People always have this stereotype that undocumented people are thieves.
Mm.
We are toxic to the Dutch culture. We don't have manners. We are illiterate. Like, it made me feel so sad that these people do not know who we are.
Mm-hmm.
These people have never associated with us. But because this is what propaganda has done, it has only spread the bad image about undocumented people.
Mm.
For me, I think it's always not very good to judge. First, get to know someone, analyze who they are, try to balance the two, and then you can always make a conclusion. But it's not always very good to just generalize that undocumented people are thieves, they're bad people, without getting to know who we are.
Yeah, maybe because you said there's like, I think you mentioned between 30,000 and 60,000 undocumented people right now living in Amsterdam, and maybe to get really concrete of what it's like for them to live, maybe can you give a few examples of the kind of things that people don't have access to legally, and that they are also sometimes denied access to, even though they have the right to access it, etc.
As an activist, I believe in advocacy for the rights for all, regardless of whether you where you come from, regardless whether you have papers or your papers are still underway, regardless whether you're stateless.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I believe human rights is a basic right for every living soul. Let's begin with housing.
Mm-hmm.
It's illegal for a human being to stay on the street.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, the LVV has only 500 places
mm-hmm.
out of the 30,000
yeah.
people. I believe this ratio is not something that I cannot even compute. My mathematics is really very far from computing this. Just a couple of years, I think 2021, there was a very huge demonstration. This is the first of a kind that I saw, the young, the old, the dogs, the cats, everybody had come for this demo. Yeah?
The bomb protest.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah.
Everybody demanded for decent housing. But when we have demonstrations of the very bad things that are happening in the shelters and the opvangs and all this kind of stuff, we don't see people come to support us. Yeah? So this time it was really a general thing that I ever saw masses. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
So for me, I believe as undocumented people, we need to have a decent place where we can stay, where we can feel a sense of belonging, where we feel protected. That is pending. When I go to another basic right, they say everybody living in the Netherlands can have health care.
Mm.
They say this is how it's supposed to be. Mm. But what we see on ground is different.
Mm-hmm.
Some DPs, when you go to them, they do not want to help you with your medical problem or something.
Yeah.
Some of them feel like you are depending on their money. So they feel you do not have a right to have this medical help.
Mm-hmm.
Other general practitioners have not been informed about if you help an undocumented person, you could be compensated. Yeah. Other general practitioners are racist. They do not want to say it, but you will feel it, mm-hmm. how you are treated. Sometimes because you see when you go to a GP, it's a first come, first serve basis, yeah? But you imagine a situation when you go to a GP, you came first, but then they're attending to other people. This is very disrespectful, but it's some form of racism.
Mm-hmm.
So with healthcare, there is CRCA, which needs to be told to all the DPs that if you help this person, you will be reimbursed, you will be compensated. But most people don't know.
Yeah.
Everybody has a right to health care. But this is not what we see. We need to see it. We need to feel it.
Mm-hmm.
We need people not to feel like, I cannot go to hospital even when I have a problem because they feel they won't be treated.
Mm.
And then also, the general practitioners should not make you feel less of a human. Turning away people has caused us lives. So many of our friends have passed on. Mm. Others, problems that were very small, escalate to a level that this problem could have been treated earlier. Yeah. But because someone didn't get the help, they are turning to surgery. Mm-hmm. And surgery means a lot of money is going to be involved, right? Who would have prevented this very small problem, but you made it escalate. And the government has to spend a lot of money, of which it also will lead this person go through circles before the surgery can be done.
Yeah, and of course, not just the money, but also someone gets very sick, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Or sometimes they lose their
lives. They lose their lives,
Another basic right, I talk about the right to owning a bank account. Mm-hmm. As we speak, public transport has been upgraded to paying with bank cards.
Yeah, yes? Upgraded.
Absolutely. Yeah. I have been living in Amsterdam for 5 years. I personally don't own a bank account.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? So that means if you have your €3 or €5 that you have to load, and in your area there isn't a machine where you could load cash, you're not going to move.
Yeah.
What does that mean? It means people are going to go in the trams, in the metros without paying.
Mm-hmm.
And this is criminal, because most of the time people have been intercepted without paying. Mm-hmm. And they end up into detention.
Yeah.
Yes.
And some even end up being deported.
Yeah.
Or staying in detention for a very long period of time. So I think this needs to be revised.
Yeah.
As you think about the growing population, the modernization, the advancement in technology, no, there are people who are still in analog.
Mm-hmm.
The undocumented people, I mean. Yeah. Because you cannot create new avenues of payments without thinking about this community of people that you compromised. They should at least let people have a bank account, because I don't think you will have money that you will not be able to account for. Maybe you need to move somewhere, but you have cash, but you cannot move.
Yeah.
Even buying bus cards or tram cards on the journey is going to stop. That means everything is getting very electronic.
Yeah.
But you are only thinking about a certain group of people.
Yeah.
If you talk about inclusive cities, you have to involve everything. Mm-hmm. You do not have distinctions. Another basic right is school, education. Mm-hmm. Knowledge is power. We all know it. Even when the kids are growing, they start by learning. They start by acquiring knowledge, understanding their surroundings. But what do we see? We have mothers who have had children who are almost 18 years. Yeah? They can only attend education up to 18. What happens to them? Where is their future? Why isn't the government looking into them? Sometimes these are kids who have been born here.
Mm-hmm.
It could be a Ghanaian mother, a Ugandan mother. Yeah? All undocumented. They have a kid here. This kid is now 18 years. Where are the rights of these people?
Yeah.
What has the society done to them? Does it mean if the child studies from 1 year to 18 years, that's where life stops? When we talk about inclusiveness, we need to involve everybody. Yeah? What are the basic things? It's about the sense of identity. Yeah, when I talk about identity, it's not about male or female. I talk about a document that really clarifies you as a person who belongs to a certain place.
Mm.
Like myself, I call myself an Amsterdamer because I'm the most popular undocumented person, yeah? But if you ask me to prove any document that shows I have lived here for the last 5 years, you need maybe to call different people to really acknowledge to that.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't have an ID. Mm-hmm. An ID is something that gives you protection. So those are some of the things that I really think are very important. Health, education, transport, a sense of identity, and then also the living situation.
Mm.
Mm.
Yeah, when you list it like that and sort of explain what it's like, it's just so much, you know, and it just speaks to just how much effort and time and just everything you need to invest just to survive on an everyday level. And then I'm thinking, because I heard you speak in several occasions, and you very often make the point that on top of all of this, this situation is particularly hard for women and for queer people as well. So I wonder if you could speak to that here as well. What makes it even harder?
I will talk from experience that most of the time we take certain things to be really normal, even when it's very oppressive.
Mm-hmm.
Because some of us have been raised in families whereby if something happens to you, you cannot easily report or you cannot easily talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
A woman is raised to lower their gaze.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
A woman is raised not to raise their voices even when it's very offensive or it's very destructive to you mm-hmm. as a person. So most of the women in Amsterdam or in general, especially those who are coming from Africa, Asia, and all these kind of places, they don't talk.
Mm.
I'm glad I have outgrown this fear. This was not me. If people who know me 5 years ago, they know me as a person who doesn't speak.
Mm.
But because you see a lot of the wrong things that are happening around you and nobody is addressing them, you kind of raise a voice to see if maybe change avails. And we have seen change availing. When we talk about the queer people also, like, it's a... Where we come from, it's not something that you can table, you can discuss. If, let's say, how we are here, we are in Uganda, and they kind of get to know we are discussing about this point, within a minute, we will be gone.
Mm-hmm.
We will be gone.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is not something you can talk about. You cannot talk about the rights of queer people.
Yep.
You cannot talk about sex education. You cannot talk about their rights to getting health care and also asking for jobs in whatever places they want. You cannot talk about all this. So, personally, I'm trying to empower some few people. If something is not really going away, address it and see if change avails.
And it makes me think you're like how you speak about how in some countries, including Uganda, when you speak about queer politics or being queer, how you're like immediately in danger.
Yeah.
And then when you come here and you want to ask for, or you ask for asylum on the basis of sexuality, then you have to prove that you're a queer person, right? Mm-hmm. And you have to like prove that you had a relationship or something like that. And then you're like, do you not understand anything?
This is the most...
Where does that...
Yeah, this is the most...
You've like been living a life where you've had to hide this because you
were in danger. Yeah, you never talked about it.
You were in danger.
Where are your family pictures?
Yeah.
Yeah, and now you have to prove so much. I don't know if heterosexual people really have to prove they're in a relationship or how they're really living for them to know that this person is a heterosexual.
They have for, like, if you ask for a spousal visa, you have to also prove your relationship.
Even when like people are asking for spousal visas or so, because the interviews that we have at IND are super intense. Mm-hmm. You have an interview from 8 a.m. in the morning till 6 p.m.
Yeah.
What they are looking for.
Recording is nothing, right?
What they are looking for, I don't know. I really don't know. And then you start asking someone what happened 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And if someone makes an irregularity in their statement and then they're lying, they're castigated that they're lying.
Yeah.
So it, for me, it doesn't really make a lot of sense.
This blows my mind.
Because...
Well, you know, it makes sense from a perspective where you try to not give people rights, right? Which is often what the system wants.
Yeah.
I guess. So it's a different kind of logic and a terrible logic. But I think that is the logic behind it.
Yeah, I think the system is actually meant to squeeze you so that they don't give you papers for whatever reason. They'll find just a small irregularity in your statement that does not really align with what they want.
Yeah.
And then you will be out.
Yeah.
Earlier, you were talking a little bit about the situation in Uganda.
Mm-hmm.
And one person who is speaking out a lot in the Ugandan context is one person that you also find incredibly inspiring, I think, and mm-hmm. that's Bobby Wine.
Yeah.
And so we asked you in preparation for this recording to bring us a couple of audio pieces that mean something to you. And you kind of came up with this speech that Bobby Wine gave. Mm. And so we are going to listen to this speech together, and we were wondering if you could talk a little bit about what it means to you, and then maybe we can use that as a kind of bridge to also talk about your work as an organizer in Amsterdam.
See how our leaders become misleaders, and see how our mentors become tormentors. Freedom fighters became dictators. They're killing our people in Karamoja. We are fighting for freedom. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to share my story, which also represents the story of very many Ugandans that have endured human rights violations for the last 36 years. I never intended to get into politics, and neither did I pay much attention to the political space until my personal consciousness was awakened rudely by my personal humiliation at the hands of a security operative. I'm a musician, and in 2005, I was the hottest artist in town, singing about parties and girls and money. And so, like any other 23-year-old who is successful, I went out and bought a big fancy car, a Cadillac Escalade with spinning wheels and a personalized number plate, ghetto. One day, I was at a nightclub in Kampala when a security operative pulled me out of my brand new car, slapped me in the face, and put a gun on my head. And he asked me, "Yo, why are you showing off? Don't you know that this country has owners?" I drove away humiliated, and this horrible feeling was all over me, a feeling of you deserved it. Because he was right, I thought I was safe as a celebrity, partying with the rich and powerful military generals, wining and dining with them. But I did not know that it didn't change the reality. The reality that I was just a boy from the ghetto, and that I would not be free from their oppressive rule until everyone in Uganda was free. That incident reminded me of the humiliation that many Ugandans faced every day. I couldn't forgive myself for having allowed my temporary and deceptive comfort and elevation from society to blind me from the plight of my fellow disadvantaged people. And I decided on that day that moving forward, I would be a voice of social justice.
So, could you talk about this speech?
Bobby Wine is a young musician who was raised by a single mother in the ghetto. To see him awaken the masses, like you have heard him say, is really amazing.
Mm.
Nobody expected him to rise up to be one of the most famous pop stars and now a very popular musician and the leader of the biggest opposition party in Uganda. We look up to him. For a long time, we had lost hope because we always had the opposition leader, Kizza Besigye, who really rallied with so many people, but he was working with the dictator.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So when Bobby Wine came and showed us that you can be something, you can make change, you can always be an important pillar in your community.
Mm.
So for a very long time, he has been singing about how elections shouldn't divide us, how we need medicine and hospitals, good roads, good schools. He has always advocated for the low-class citizens, yeah? So when he came up and he showed interest in going into parliament, everybody wanted to support him
mm-hmm.
because he is a man of the people. He loves the people. It was the most amazing thing to see someone who most people look at as a low class, how he rose up and he went to parliament. He won the votes by a very big margin. That is where his support started. I've always loved his music. I've always listened to his music. But I didn't see him as a politician.
Mm-hmm.
But then when it came to a time that he has only not sung as beautiful music, but he is now representing in parliament. We saw a person who has potential, a person who is going to fight for the low-class citizens, a person who is going to have a voice, because we have so many members of parliament who dare not say a word for the 5 years they stay in office. Everything they say no, no. No is the only statement that they say. So with Bobby Wine, we looked at him as someone who can carry a message. And most of all, he has made a name through music.
Mm.
So in him, we saw potential. In him, we saw a light. In him, we saw democracy.
And I'm thinking about your work.
Yeah.
As a founder of and spokesperson of Amsterdam City Rights, is his light, as you call it, also something that you carry with you in your organizing?
As the founder of Amsterdam City Rights, I should say I'm the co-founder, yeah, because, I mean, we were a team, and we wanted to see ourselves as the most inspiring people to the most marginalized group of people, that is the undocumented people. At the beginning, we did not look at very high prospects. We were just a very small group. We wanted to have a platform. But we didn't know how to navigate the political system, the Amsterdam city, the municipality as a whole. So it was kind of hard, but because of the resilience and the focus that we had, we never gave up. We never had an office. Our office was just gotten just a couple of months ago, just last year, that we got a permanent place. We had the things that we wanted to do, but we didn't know where to start. But because we believed in ourselves, we knew it's our voice against someone else's voice. We knew our voices could be heard once we are given platform. So with Amsterdam City Rights, we were not only looking at people without papers. We wanted people with papers, also the Amsterdamers, to join us so that they could get our story. They could get our visions. They could get the lives that we live on a daily and try to relate them with theirs. So with Amsterdam City Rights, it was not just about forming a group. It was about having platforms. It was about giving information. It was about removing the stereotypes. Because most of the time, you need to do something good before you are recognized. This is not what we were looking at.
Yeah.
We wanted to be visible in the Dutch language, they call it inzichtbaar. I know this word because for the first time someone said it to me and I really wanted to find out what it meant. Yeah. And when I found it means invisible. So in my mind, I'm like, oh, so we are here and they don't acknowledge that we are here. To me, it was very painful to know. So with that said, that being said, and having that in mind, I'm like, no, we have to keep pushing. We have to see that we could have a city where undocumented people are discussed with them being present. Because we always have a saying that nothing about us without us. Most of the policies, the programs that are running for undocumented people are put in place minus us, the residents knowing. And we feel this is very unfair. So Amsterdam City Rights always tries to see that we are fully engaged in almost everything that happens in the city. Because you will say, undocumented people need to eat KFC every day. No, this is not what we need. This is not what we need.
We need tangible things.
Yeah, we need tangible things. We need our presence to be felt. Yeah, we need to be people who are a part of society.
Yeah,
we need to have platforms where we have dialogue, not just discussing anything.
Yeah,
but to have dialogue to see how can we improve such situations? How can we help you? What do you want? What can you bring at the table?
Yeah, and in a context in which kind of, how do you say that, the whole landscape communicates to you that you shouldn't be there, that you should leave, mm-hmm. that you should kind of just disappear, that your life doesn't exist. And in that context, actually just claiming space.
Absolutely.
And claiming your space at the table is such an important part of the work and becoming visible.
Yeah, because you cannot say undocumented people are not here. We are here.
Mm. Exactly.
Whether you acknowledge our existence or not, we are here.
Yeah.
And the moment we acknowledge that we are here, we claim our space.
Mm.
After reclaiming the space, we need to have platforms. After having platforms, we do not just sit at the table and nod our heads or stuff. The voices are carried forward.
Yeah.
And then when the voices are carried forward, we need to be listened to. Then after we have been listened to, we need to see implementation. Implementation to me means that some of the things or the demands that we want are being put into prospect. So by acknowledging our existence, giving us a platform and then working on some of the things that we demand for, I believe we will be included. Then we'll see inclusive cities involving undocumented people.
You all go to any opportunity to have your voice heard, but you also created this another podcast series, actually, to just have your own conversations, right?
Yeah.
And to not use other people's platforms, but really just to have your own conversation, to really speak your mind, to really speak to what's going on.
It's called Amsterdam City Radio.
Yes.
Yeah. We do not just have Amsterdam City Radio. We are working on different projects.
Mm.
First, we started with the Amsterdam City Rights app.
Mm-hmm.
The Amsterdam City Rights app is an app which anybody can download on their phone.
Yeah.
With this app, you're able to see where you can find free food.
Yeah.
You can find where you can have a shower. Yeah. You can find where you can have clothes. You can find where you can have conversation or improve on your Dutch skills. You can get all these organizations. Yeah. For a period of time, we launched it just last year in 2021, somewhere around May. Many people have downloaded it.
Yeah.
And we are trying to see the positivity of not just undocumented people, but what they can bring at the table, what they can bring in society. If very many people get to know about City Rights app, if you get someone who is stranded and is looking for a sense of belonging, you can always recommend them to this app. Everybody apparently has a smartphone. Once you have a smartphone, the City Rights app can help you navigate the city and then also know some of the things.
And also, because I once went with someone to the doctor and they had the app and they showed it to the doctor to show, look, I have a right to a GP, right? Like you can also use it to claim your rights.
Yeah.
So it's not just the knowledge, but it's a tool of power, really.
Absolutely. Because once you know that this app exists, once you have the thing that we are still trying to see, that at least it can be translated to all languages.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because if someone only speaks Chinese and they're undocumented and then they have this app and it's all in English and they cannot see, it's not really very useful. But once it has all the languages, anybody can use it.
Yeah.
And it also shows that it's not just for undocumented people, but it's for all people who believe that we can work together as a team or together as humans.
Yeah, and for the people who don't yet believe that.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
on addition to the City Rights app, we created a platform where we believe the City Rights office is a place where you have all your rights that you ever wanted in life.
Yes.
With the radio, you can always discuss however offensive, however impolite, you feel safe.
Yeah.
Yeah, because this is our home. This is our home at the City Rights Radio.
Yeah.
You can always carry your voice. Your voice is going to leave the studios and it will be out there on Spotify.
Yeah.
So with the City Rights Radio, we encourage people to have whatever information they want to give to the public get known.
Yeah.
Because you may hear my voice, but you may never get to see me.
Mm-hmm.
Some people are very afraid of cameras.
Yes.
Yeah? But we could carry their voice out there so that people know, oh, we had Charis on City Rights Radio.
Yeah.
He was talking about this issue. I never knew that undocumented people are going through this.
Yeah.
So your voice can really go to so many places.
Yeah.
That's why we have a City Rights Radio where we challenge the city on almost all the things that are happening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I wanted to ask, because it's called Amsterdam City Rights,
mm-hmm.
right? And I wanted to ask about the city part. And I think it's very significant that you ask for rights in Amsterdam. It's also, I think, to do maybe with the situation in the Netherlands where a lot of social services, etc., are supposedly delivered by the municipality rather than the national government.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to ask you whether it was a conscious choice to really demand rights in the city and to focus on the municipality through that.
As opposed to the national level.
As opposed to the national level, indeed.
When it comes to the national government, just a few things that I read and that I had from a few individuals, it's always very hard to start from the top to the city level. So we wanted to start at the preliminary stage.
Mm.
With Amsterdam City Rights, we wanted to have a foundation, like the city rights to be, the Amsterdam City Rights to be like the genesis.
Mm.
And try to spread the gospel to other cities as well. We tried it with Utrecht, but it wasn't really, really coming up the way we wanted. So we dropped it a bit. But it's not something that we are going to give up easily.
Mm.
Yeah, it's something that we want to reach out to Utrecht, Rotterdam, Den Haag, Groningen. Like, we want to see
to create cities a network united. Of organizing.
Yeah.
Apparently, with Amsterdam City Rights, we have created cities united. We have a base in Limburg. We have a base in Italy. We have a base in Germany. We have all these stakeholders that are working with undocumented people that we are trying to partner with. So we are not only targeting Amsterdam just as a city.
Mm-hmm.
We are looking at a broader picture.
Well, maybe this is a good moment to play then a last sound clip that we wanted to listen to together.
Mm-hmm.
And it's again by Bobby Wine, but this time it's his musical side.
Mm-hmm.
So you chose to play a song that's called Freedom.
Yeah.
And we're going to listen to it.
Uganda etambula edamabika kituse nokutweta myegwanga lyaffe mulimba mutufuga bubinyo namwe kale tetuganye mwalwa na munsiko naye gwomwana gwe wasanga nga tanazalibwa kati naye yazala nata kino mukiŋambire muze yabamutukako saba ne bazeyi banne bamugambeko enensonga kyamunyo kyalemeddeko kati egwanga lyona lyenyamidde bagambe yalinga demokulasi mwamubuluka kati yafuuka na hipokulisi bagambe yali fandamento kyenji mwagizala wakati mukifudde no kyenji bagamba kyensonga ezabalwanya kati mwazibukako namwe mukola biri ebyabali bakusaba nti konstitutioni yabwe togikwatako kubamwe musigadde essuubi lyabwe aise Kampala mokotumba de jinja We are fighting for freedom Kabale lukunjiri malala kaseze We are fighting for freedom Solo tichitugum aruwa liragun We are fighting for freedom Aise wakiso masaka wende mitiana We are fighting for freedom Yo! We are
are living in a time similar to the one of slave trade. This operation is worse than apartheid. The gun is the master, citizen slave. The ball of Africa is bleeding. Question, what was the purpose of the liberation when we can't have a peaceful transition? What is the purpose of the constitution when the government disrespects the constitution? Where is my freedom of expression?
I can ask a question as well.
Yes, you can ask. You can ask.
During this episode, but also for us during the whole series of the Verbranders, we've been talking about the incredible kind of violence that is embedded in borders and that borders produce.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of, you almost can't wrap your head around the amount of, even beyond the deaths that we see every day, even beyond the years of people's lives that are taken, kind of extracted, stolen from people as they're put in prisons and in camps and in all kinds of destitute places, made to live on the streets, and how this affects people completely in unequal ways, right? Like that some people get to, for some people, the world is theirs, and for others have to like fight to get a millimeter ahead, have to put in like years of work. But on the other side of that, there's all of these people surviving and living and fighting for freedom and collectively, but also individually, somehow making life in the face of all of this. Mm-hmm. And so I guess this song speaks maybe to that.
That song really resonates to almost everybody who is Ugandan or everybody who has one time fled their place of origin or their country because of one reason or the other. For a long period of time, we have always advocated for freedom of speech, freedom of movement, freedom of personal expression, and freedom of being who you are. Yeah, when we talk about freedom of movement, we see what happened just last year when Africans were beaten and killed at the Spain border, Morocco and Spain, it never got the media attention that we wanted. I personally tried to upload so many images, and my Twitter account was taken, my Facebook account was taken. I mean, we did not see this happen. When we see that the media attention is given to particular groups of people, it puts us at a state of thinking that some people are more human than others. We expected the world to mourn with us. We expected so many people to come on board and condemn this. We didn't see this happen. When we talk about freedom of speech in my country, if you talk about the government, if you talk ill, anything about the government, be it radio, be it when you're a bit sarcastic or joking, maybe you will vanish and your family never gets to see you. Yeah? When we talk about freedom of movement, that is something we need to see, but borders were created to obstruct or stop some people from coming. So with this song, it speaks a lot about many of us who are in the diaspora and then those who are still trying to find a sense of belonging. People are beaten, people are abducted, people are killed. Apparently, I know like 300 people who disappeared during the elections in 2021. Mm-hmm. Nobody knows if they're still alive or not. Mass graves have been discovered, and nobody claims the responsibility of this grave. What hurts me the most is the Western world, Europe, US, and all these other countries, they have continued to finance projects of these people committing crimes on humanity. We had a demonstration in 2019 about the $1 billion that was going to be granted by IMF to Uganda. We demonstrated. We saw all their pictures that we presented to IMF. We saw a picture of a baby who was shot inside her mother's house. She lost her life because of the violence. But what happened just a week after the demonstration? The money was released. It's not that we don't want the money to go to Uganda, no. We want the money to be put to the right use, to the real core. Yeah? The schools are in shambles. The medical care is in shambles. Everything is in shambles. Nobody dares to talk about it. Yeah? If you talk about it, you will vanish, or you will stay in prison forever, or you will get killed. And for women, it's even worse, because sometimes women are raped and infected with all this other kind of sexually transmitted diseases. So freedom is not something that we should ask, because I believe everybody is born free. Also, freedom is part of the human rights, because you have to be able to exercise it. Whether you're Ugandan and you're living in Netherlands without papers, you must exercise your freedom.
If people listening to this podcast could help you and other undocumented people living in the Netherlands or in Amsterdam, what can they do?
Well, there's a lot everybody can do. First, it has to really begin with the mindset. What do you know about undocumented people? How do you relate with them? Do you just hear about them, or you interact with them? The mindset has to be really in line with knowing who they are, what they can do and what they cannot do. Two is about contribution. You do not need to give people money. I find it very sad that undocumented people have been put in a compromising situation, given weekly allowances. Give them opportunities. Give them opportunities to work. Give them opportunities to volunteer. Give them opportunities to learn something with their physical hands. Thirdly, is about inclusion. You do not talk about inclusive cities. I always say this with a lot of vigor, why most of the time people are advocating for inclusive cities. When you advocate for inclusive cities, make sure even those who are still in their mother's wombs are included. They may be coming into this world without papers, but they should be included. And lastly, if there's anything Amsterdam should do, is to lend a listening ear to undocumented people. Because when you listen to someone, you're able to judge them, you're able to analyze them, and you're able to criticize. If you listen to someone, you can always see what they desire, what they need, or what their potential is. So I believe we should be given a chance to be listened to, and then also see how we can contribute to society.
Well, Hidaya, thank you so much for being with us and giving us an opportunity to listen to you and others to listen to you through this episode. Also, again, City Rights Radio, if you want to listen to the voices of undocumented people. But thank you so much for being with us today. This was very special.
Thank you. Thank you for speaking.
Thank you for inviting me.
Before closing this episode, we would like to thank a few people and collectives. B. Carrot for the illustrations we sometimes use on our social media. Thomas from Dark Roast for the graphic design. Joris and David and Ellen Neske for the theme music. And Medusa Magic Studio for allowing us to record our episode there.